Welcome to the Strong Starts podcast with your hosts, Jessica Whitehead and Sarah Gerber-Kai.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Strong Starts podcast. Thank you all for listening, subscribing, and following us on social media. We are at Strong Starts Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And we've been having a lot of fun on social media with everyone, so we thought we'd have a little bit of fun on the podcast. We're going to be introducing some segments over the next few weeks. And the next segment we're going to start with is things we said this week to a kindergartner that we would not say to our coworkers. And I'll kick us off with this week I said, I peed on the floor to a group of students.
And I did the classic, put your balls away.
Yes, a classic that we will avoid at all costs unless we break out into a fit of giggles. Though I did say this week, make sure you button your pants.
And I did ask a kid, do you want me to call your mom?
Can you imagine saying that to one of our teachers? And this week I said, do you need to lay down in your fort?
I wish I had a fort to lay down in.
It'd be pretty nice.
And something I wish someone would say to me, first work, then play.
Yes, please. That's something I need to hear most days. But I think I have you beat, Jessica. I did ask a student this week, did you poop? Haven't said that to a teacher yet.
No, you definitely win. Thanks for not asking that of me this week.
Yes, you're welcome.
All right, now we're going to dive into a student scenario. It's one that you might have heard before, something similar. It's something like this might be talked about on social media. But we have a student who is in math, in a math class, and this student hates math, even has a learning difficulty in math. And math is a known trigger for this student. This student gets three problems in a row wrong on their math assignment, throws their pencil, crumples their paper, tips over their chair, might even start throwing the chair, and tries to run out of the room. The staff that are in that room block the door, and the student then pushes them pretty hard. So the staff move, and the student elopes from the classroom. And if we break that down and into what punitive action that student might receive and why they might get a referral to the office, that action might look like being sent home for the day, and on the referral, say something like physical aggression on a staff member, eloping from the designated area. They might even get in-school suspension the next day, and you know, maybe this is marked as a multiple offense.
Yeah, and this is an occurrence that feels pretty common, Jessica, K through 12, which might be a surprise to those listeners who are not in education. So let's just kind of break down then what that will look like, that discipline, that follow-up. So student is sent home for the rest of the day. Well, for our elementary school students, that might look like, okay, parents work, so student goes home with a grandparent. Grandparents help the student with that math assignment or catch up on anything that they missed throughout the day, anything that was sent home. And then the student's grounded for the rest of the day to their room. For our secondary students, that might look like, okay, they go home. Well, parent works, so the parent's out of the house. Kids left home alone. Maybe parent took the phone before leaving, but that student can just go over to a friend's house, get on their bike, go over to a friend's house, borrow a phone, you know, maybe engage in some recreational activities. I know I had a lot of students who would disclose to me, oh yeah, I just went home and got high and enjoyed the rest of my day. I'm hanging out with my friends. So that might be what that looks like. And what does the rest of the day look like for the rest of the class? Well, there's some relief for the teacher and their classmates. And that's really reinforcing of the fact that they decided to exclude the student that day. They get this relief, that disruption is gone for the rest of the day. Maybe the class gets through their math lesson quicker, and so they get to do some extra fun math games at the end of the day. And everybody feels very relieved by the decision that the student was sent home. So then that student comes back the next day. Maybe they have in-school suspension. That looks like they get individual help on their math. They get all their work done by lunchtime, and then they spend the rest of the day just independently reading or having some extra assignments on Google Classroom. And this provides a lot of reinforcement for that behavior for that student too, because they get their need met, you know, that need that they initially had to have some support on their math work. Now it gets met through in-school suspension. They get connection because they're one-on-one or in a small group of people for ISS. And so it would be, following those behavior principles, it would be expected that we might see behavior increase. And that's what our data typically shows us, is that those behaviors at least continue or increase because that was reinforcing. Same thing with the teacher. The teacher got the relief by excluding the student from the class. So the teacher's might keep doing the same things that they were doing that led to that exclusion because it's reinforcing. They didn't have disruption for the rest of the day. And interestingly enough, there's also some reinforcement for the administration. They're thanked by staff and teachers for choosing to suspend a student because there was less problem behavior for the rest of the day, fewer disruptions, that feeling of, oh, I finally got to teach in my class. The admin don't have to respond to behavior for the rest of the day because the student was excluded, and they avoid any possible grievances from a teacher or their union as a result of having disruptive behavior in class. So there's a lot of reinforcement that comes by excluding.
Yeah, Sarah, and people are sometimes surprised to hear that mm-hmm. this is, a reinforcement, which by definition increases the future chance that this behavior is going to happen. And so when we see this behavior happening repeatedly, even after being suspended, that means that behavior is being reinforced. They're trying to get out of math class, and that's what we're giving them. So they're going to keep doing it to get that need met. And so when we think of what punitive actions really do, we're not really sure if it's really beneficial to students because data is showing that it's not. And so when we look at Hattie's meta-analysis and his effect sizes, the study that he did, suspension and expulsion has a negative effect size for students. Mm-hmm. There's typically an increase in problem behavior. We sometimes see short-term compliance. So this action happens, they get ISS, they might come back to class, and we might see this period of time where they comply, but then they revert back. We also, in students who have been suspended and expelled, there's a higher likelihood of arrest and incarceration. And what they found is all students who attend schools that have higher suspension rates are at greater risk of arrest and incarceration. Harvard finds that these students have a 15 to 20% higher rate than students at schools with policies that lead to lower suspension rates. And the factor that really stood out in the Harvard study was that leadership was really what made the difference and affected the policy behind suspensions and expulsions. We also tend to see learning loss. And when we think of FAPE, which is free and appropriate public education, we have to really evaluate, are we denying students that education while they're receiving these exclusionary practices? And people who were suspended or expelled early in childhood were found to have lower cognition and increased problems with memory and attention in their mid-adulthood years.
So and these are all, really, sorry, these are all just really interesting. So I just wanted to, I was really interested when you said, Jessica, about the arrest and incarceration rates in particular, because, we typically hear folks say, oh, well, what about the other kids in the class? Don't they deserve an education? Don't they deserve to learn? And the fact is, the research shows us that all students have increased risk of arrest and incarceration if they're in a school that just has a greater likelihood of suspending students. Doesn't matter if they themselves had ever been suspended or expelled. And so, when we are trying to think about our entire school community, we have to consider what the research says, that actually suspensions and expulsions can have negative effects on everybody.
Yeah, and that was interesting to me, too, is it's not just the student being suspended. It's what the environment is telling people. Mm-hmm. And it makes us think, if we are pushing students out of school, what are we pushing these students towards? Right? So are we pushing them towards a negative environment at that time? What are we pushing them towards in their future? And what are we exposing other students to? And it really brings forth this idea of, belonging and what we're mm-hmm. teaching students in the classroom as well. And punitive actions aren't really that black and white. We want them to be, right? Mm-hmm. We want to say, oh, this happened, so we get this. We want this to be this cut and dry, And do we want this for that? If the student punches, should they just receive ISS no matter what that punch is for, no matter the context? You know, we get asked and we hear teachers asking or staff members asking, do we have rubrics for this? Is there a matrix? What is the discipline plan? You know, what is the protocol for our school, our district? But sometimes I wonder if we're taking the time to dig into the why. Yes, we have requirements, right? We can't go around punching people. But are we digging into the why and what needs are being communicated, what needs are being met or not met? And do we slow down and do we think what effects we're having when we do these practices? And Sarah and I aren't sitting here giving permission for this problem behavior to just occur. Oh, yeah, let the problem behavior occur and don't give consequences. But I think what happens is it changes when we look at it through a different lens. You know, if a student punches a staff member, did we dig into the why? Not that there's an excuse, right? We don't want to excuse punching, but did we look into it? Were they, you know, the student communicating that they needed space and the staff member kept getting into their space? Leave me alone, you know, and we're getting closer and closer to that student versus it's being meant and a student lashing out and punching a staff member because they're just angry and don't want to do math. So I think when we're looking at it and we have a different viewpoint, sometimes that can lend itself to different ways of responding to behavior. And even when we're looking at the origin of the word discipline, it doesn't mean just laying down the law. The origin of that word is around instruction, training, knowledge. We even think of the word disciple as a student, a follower. And so when we think of what discipline should be, and what consequences should be, there should be this focus on teaching, right? And this focus on how we help people become better.
Well, and that brings to mind, like, yeah, it is really messy. I mean, the work of human behavior and teaching, cause and effect and choice and consequence, it's all very messy. And there's a lot of different lenses on it. And you're right. We are just saying, we're not saying like it's all cut and dry. We're going to permit the behavior. We want to, you know, banish all suspensions and expulsions. It's going to be messy. But I like what you're saying about looking at this lens of what are we really trying? What is the end goal of this discipline, even if it is a punitive action? And does that meet the end goal? Does it meet the underlying needs of the student? Does it teach behavior? What do we really want to see? And right now, our data is showing us that suspension and expulsion alone, or those punitive actions alone, do not decrease behavior. And there's other lenses, there's other points of view on this as well in our schools. So let's just get into it. Corporal punishment is still on the books in 17 states. It's still legal in schools, and it's practiced in at least 14 states, as is documented. But spanking and corporal punishment can actually have major effect on brain development. So spanking can alter a child's brain function in the same way as severe forms of abuse can. And this was a little surprising to me because spanking is perfectly legal. You know, there's certain forms of spanking that are not, but for the most part, the general spanking that we think of is legal. And like we said, it's permitted in 14 states. But what Harvard has found in studying the effect of spanking on the brain is that when children are spanked, that there is a higher activity response to perceived threat. So the part of your brain that's responsible for detecting threat, deciding if you're safe or not, and regulating your emotions is larger for children who have been spanked. And the World Health Organization classifies corporal punishment as a violation of children's rights to respect for physical integrity and human dignity, health, development, education, and freedom from torture and other cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment or punishment.
And that's really interesting that, you know, you don't realize sometimes that corporal punishment is still legal. I know that there has been talks about banning corporal punishment, and it, you know, it's crazy to me that it hasn't happened yet, especially with all the data and research about the harm it does, you know, for people, and that it could just be done in schools. I mean, I've been in a place as a teacher that what if I write a permission slip that says you're allowed to spank my child? Like, well, I'm still not gonna, you know?
Right.
And so it does kind of bridge this parenting style piece, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so parents still parent the way they parent. And so that does affect too, you know, it does affect the student. And it kind of thinks about, you know, what is even fair in this whole thing? So the word fair comes up when we talk about, you know, punishment practices, discipline practices, you know, consequences, what we're expecting from children in schools. And this question has come up a lot. Like, what is fair anyway? So when we're doing all these things, what is fair to us? What is fair to the student? And, you know, that definition of fair is so interesting because we don't think of fair as everyone getting the same thing, right? It's, oh, it's not fair that he has this or she has this. That's so weird. It's like if I have a pair of shoes and they're size 9 shoes, and is it fair for everyone to have size 9 women's shoes, right? You know? And so fair isn't always everyone having the same thing. We're really trying to give people what they need. And so when discipline happens and these punitive actions happen, are we teaching? Are we working on what the needs are, that weren't met in the first place and why we got to the behavior we got to? And what are we telling kids? Are we telling kids we want them to hurt the way others hurt? You did this, and so now you get this because you did this to somebody else. And so, you know, what does that mean? And what message does that send? And we see a lot of school districts across the country changing their practices as they're learning about this research and they're learning about what these practices do to children. And also, I should say, do to adults too, because sometimes it doesn't feel good to us when we do these things. I know I've lost sleep over plenty of incidents, but Oakland Unified School District, they're a big one. They're one of the first schools or school districts to eliminate suspension and expulsion for things like disruption and willful compliance. So students choosing not to do something. And they've also implemented restorative practices in all schools. And if you're interested in restorative practice, I highly recommend that you check out Oakland Unified School District and their website. They have so many good resources. In Kern County, California, they've required mandatory training for teachers and staff. And they've also held public forums regarding their discipline data. So they've been very transparent and they've been working on educating their staff. In Connecticut, they also prohibit out-of-school suspension and expulsion in pre-K to 2 unless for violent incidents, weapons, or drugs. And in Oregon, there's no out-of-school suspensions for K through 5 unless incidents of the same, like violence, drugs, weapons. In Oakland schools, with a restorative justice coordinator, student suspensions dropped by approximately 20 percentage points within 3 years. So it did take time to see change, and they had to work very hard at it. But after 3 years, they've been seeing a lot of improvement. And change doesn't happen overnight. So studies who look at schools with 1 year or less of implementations, they don't see as much effect. We have to stick it out, and we have to look long term. And that does happen, right? We say, oh, we tried it for this amount of time, and it wasn't working. You got to stick it out, and you got to put forth a lot of effort into that.
Yeah. Well, and that just shows the importance of investing in having some of those hard conversations about the philosophical underpinnings of these restorative practices versus the other ways of doing discipline and consequence, because it is something that staff are going to have to really stick out even through that messy middle. And it would probably be helpful for us to say, states hold most of the control in terms of suspension and expulsion policy. There are, you know, federally, suspensions and expulsions happen for bringing firearms to school, you know, weapons. But besides that, states have a lot of control over those policies. So what do we stand to lose by, you know, not critically evaluating our policies? Well, we went over some of the research, and there's a large impact that it's going to have on students if we continue with zero tolerance, harsh suspension and expulsion policies. But what harm would it really do us to look at implementing some of these restorative practices system-wide? There's research that shows that Restorative practices, using that restorative model in our schools, has the potential for decreasing problem behavior over time, for improving school climate. That's been found through staff and student surveys that it's improved school climate, improved GPAs. Students report fewer depressive symptoms, less sleep deprivation, less substance use, illness, absences, victimization, gang membership. And then, of course, fewer and shorter suspensions are being reported by those schools that have the full model of a system-wide restorative justice model implemented in their schools. So there's a lot to be gained by at least exploring this idea of restorative practices in our schools instead of solely punitive actions. We're going to go into just a little bit about restorative practices, what they are, but definitely, like Jessica said, if you're interested, really check out Oakland Unified. They have a lot of resources. But generally speaking, restorative practices is a term for a collection of practices that aim to build relationships, to deliver social-emotional learning, and conflict resolution. This can include practices like having a restorative conference with a facilitator when there was a conflict between two people or a small group, holding restorative circles in a classroom. So that's a circle with the whole classroom to improve culture and climate in the class, and doing restorative reentry meetings when there has been a suspension or in incarceration to bring students back into school. And then just overall, there's community building practices that are embedded throughout the school that has implemented restorative practice. And best practice is to have those practices embedded into your policy and at every tier of intervention. So if your school has a multi-tiered system of support, you would see those restorative practices at each tier, and then your school's policies would reflect that.
And Sarah, you are so right with that, because I know when you and I are working together on some of these restorative pieces, mm-hmm. we've seen a lot of improvement with students mm-hmm. and how they're talking about their behavior, how they're reflecting on their behavior. And even in the early years, I mean, we're talking about kindergartners being able to do this. And we even have been able to dive into behavior mapping. And we have some kids that are pretty good at it once they're regulated. We talk about what their problem behavior was, or what the problem was, and what their problem behavior was as a result. So this happened, and because of this, I did this. And because of what I did, this is how it made people feel. But then we flip it around and say, okay, that's what happened. Now, what could you have done differently? And we walk through that. And then we also get to a point. Sometimes it takes a lot of prompting. Get to a point of, if you did it that way, how could they feel different? And that has really helped support that the restorative practices piece. And we have kids that they sit down and they work through this. And like I said, it can take some prompting, but we do see a difference in what they're thinking and how they're talking about behavior.
Yes, absolutely. And while you were describing that, Jessica, it was just making me think, like, how meaningful it would have been as a young person, you know, if I had ever felt bullied or singled out or targeted by anybody at school, if instead of just seeing them, you know, taken out of class for a little while, if they actually had a dialogue with me and I was able to tell them how it made me feel. And then I actually like had the experience of somebody recognizing that and owning up to their part in that and trying to make amends. And it just on the face of it, even feels more meaningful. But you're right. We've seen that with students who've had restorative conferences after there's been injury in a relationship. And it can be a very powerful thing, even from a young age. So, but it does get messy, like we said. And, you know, we can see both sides to this conversation. If I guess many sides, there's many sides to it, but just the sides that are proponents of suspension and expulsion and other exclusionary practices as a way to be able to kind of teach a lesson to students and make the school community feel safer. We understand that. We understand that point of view. We also understand the point of view of taking a more restorative approach, trying to bolster classroom climate and culture. And so we don't think that there's a black and white to this. I don't think that it can be all or nothing. But let's just take one scenario of what this might look like if we are going to embed some restorative practice into our work. Let's say a student punches a teacher. Again, believe it or not, not a very uncommon scenario in schools. And the student is suspended. The school's policy says that anytime a student uses violence, that they will be suspended. So the student's suspended. But then because their policy incorporates some of those restorative practices, they hold a restorative conference upon reentry, and the teacher is present, the student is present, and somebody who can advocate for both the teacher and the student are present as well, because these things can get pretty emotional pretty quickly. And then there's a facilitator who's trained to have these kinds of conversations, these conferences. And so they're able to talk and repair and come to an understanding of what it is that the student was needing, but what the teacher was needing as well, so that they can hopefully repair and move forward and try to help meet needs in a preventative way. And then all the students who were affected by seeing that happen, they all get to come together with the student who is suspended and have a restorative circle so that they can also express how it made them feel. The student who punched the teacher can hear that as well, and they can help to all come to some kind of understanding about the impact of these actions on the whole classroom community. And then kind of taking a step back and looking at the system as a whole. The system as a whole is looking at this, and if this is a pattern of behavior, then the appropriate stakeholders are evaluating the underlying needs of that student to understand the behavior and make a plan to meet those needs early. And if students and staff continue to be afraid or nervous to come to school or whatever it might be, then there's ongoing restorative circles with the class to repair what was ruptured. And that's pretty common. I would imagine that that would be pretty likely if there was that type of violence to occur. There's also skill building then that's provided to the student, reteaching that can happen on behavior for the student who is suspended to address those underlying lagging skills. And then all the while, administration, the district, the state as a whole is reviewing and updating policy and procedure as gaps are uncovered through this process so that we can meet needs early and find opportunities to be restorative rather than punitive. But like we said, it really can't be all or nothing. We don't imagine a scenario in which we would say that it was all or nothing.
No, and we also are not saying all of this is easy. So it takes work. And there's definitely ways we can do this. But it really, if it's structured the way it's supposed to be structured, it can really be this community building experience. And it can also help repair these relationships and create this sense of belonging. Like, yes, you do belong here. And here's how we work together. And we have these, you know, we have this relationship building school wide. We have this culture around holding circles, talking about feelings, the way we, you know, have to repair these broken relationships. We see definitely a different feel, or we feel different in our schools. And you can feel it in classrooms that already that are doing these practices. But really what we want to is not only to do this within our schools, but increase this knowledge within our community. And we're talking about parents and stakeholders that have this buy-in to education and understanding that there's so many benefits to doing this, that we're not just going to, you know, discipline compliance into people, right? We're going to actually work with people. We're going to have these vulnerable conversations. And it's really creates this great sense of community with everybody when we can all do that together.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jessica. And I appreciate you mentioning about these vulnerable conversations and the kind of courage and resilience that it takes to have these. So on that note, we thought that we'd end with another segment where we can talk about what we're going to do for our own personal regulation, which of course will help us to become more resilient, to be able to have these difficult conversations. So Jessica, what are your weekend plans for some adult regulation this weekend?
Well, I know it sounds a little dorky, but some of you might relate. I'm going to be building moss poles for my plants. I'm probably taking some walks outside. You know, you got to get that fresh air. But also, don't tell too many people, but I'll also be playing Halo this weekend a little bit.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but you just said that on a recorded podcast. So I think it's going to get out. I think word's going to be out. Well, my plans for some self-regulation this weekend are I'm going to go get a tattoo. I'm going to go have some ink therapy this weekend and just chill out on a table.
All right. So until next time, thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get podcasts. And follow us at Strong Starts Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.